tried to speak about, you know, sort of the background as well. So the talk is quite technical and I have lots of slides. So I wanted to present a quite clear statement to start off with. So one particular thing that I'm interested in is to extend this TIA-BOT perspective to look at, you know, symplectic structures on spaces of Stokes data. And so there's a quite clear picture that, you know, Dillene proved that the representations of the fundamental group of a smooth curve parameterize the connections on vector bundles, which have this special condition of having regular singularities at each puncture. And this leads to symplectic manifolds, which are often called character varieties. But it's possible to look at this, you know, sort of less restrictive question where you look at all of the connections on vector bundles, and these are parameterized by the irregular Riemann-Hilbert correspondence by Stokes and monogamy data, and it's possible to put symplectic structures on those, and these are now called the wild character varieties. This was first looked at in my thesis in 1999 with an analytic perspective that extended this perspective of a tier and bot. And then there's various more algebraic perspectives afterwards. And the most general statement appears in this paper with Daisuke from 2015, which answers this general question. Pardon? Right. So one of the main technical things that we have now understood how to do is to glue pieces of surface together that have wild boundary conditions. So one wants to try to see how those are, and this is one of the simplest twisted examples. So I'll describe a few untwisted examples. At the end of the talk, I'll get back to this twisted picture like this. This is related to the Panova 1 equation. So let me back up a bit. So we would like to try to classify algebraic integrable systems. So the ones I want to have a look at, let's say they're an algebraic symplectic manifold together with a map to an affine space of half the dimension such that the generic fiber is a smooth Lagrangian abelian variety. There's slightly more general definitions where you have open parts, but we'll take the Hitchin perspective that gives natural compactifications of the fibers, so it's not restrictive under this condition that we want to put, that it has a lax representation, and by that we mean it's isomorphic to a symplectic leaf of a meromorphic Hitchin system. In fact, we don't know how to make things work for arbitrary symplectic leaves, and so I've put in the word good here, and I'll try to at least mention a precise definition of good in the talk. So first of all, one would like to try to classify such things up to isomorphism, or perhaps, you know, isogeny or deformation, and then look at the different representations of each system. So the picture is that lots of integrable systems have different lax representations and they're the same geometric object. So I suppose the basic picture is that, you know, the story of Hitchin systems is something like a global version of Lie groups. And one would like to classify the nice geometric objects which occur as an analog of the classification of Lie groups that people looked at hundreds of years ago, and we sort of want to pursue that direction. There's a certain sort of theory of Dinkin graphs which start to emerge that we hope help to do that. Okay, so for example, one can look at the isospectral deformations of a rational matrix, say A of Z, and we can look at the characteristic polynomial and the coefficients, that's the Hamiltonians, and one can get quite simple symplectic manifolds by, so here I actually want to fix the polar parts of A, D, Z, and these are then symplectic, and these have partial compactifications that fit into this picture that we had just now. So the star here means it's an open part. And there are examples of these that go back to, you know, Jacobi and Garnier and others. Okay, so the other large class of examples to start off with are these Hitchens systems. So basically Hitchens' original perspective. So let's fix the groups to be GLN, but it works for other reductive groups as well. And one can look at the cotangent bundle of the moduli space of stable bundles, so it's pairs V phi, where V is a stable vector bundle on the curve and phi is the Higgs field. And this has this partial compactification, the moduli space of Higgs bundles, or the Dolbeau moduli space, where you have this stability condition for the pair, which does not imply that V itself has to be a stable vector bundle. It's just a stable pair. And then you have the Hitchian map, this vector space of half the dimensions. So that's the sort of canonical example of the type of objects we would like to have a look at. Okay, but Hitchin proved more, that the total space of the integrable system actually has a hyperkähler metric as well. And in fact, it has, you know, three different algebraic structures. So from the motivic perspective, you're trying to understand what is H1 of the curve with coefficients in the group G. And this has this Dolbeau perspective, which is the moduli space of Higgs bundles. The Dirac perspective is a space of algebraic connections. So that's basically the two different complex structures that occur. But there's a third algebraic structure. The Riemann-Hilbert isomorphism gives a complex analytic isomorphism to the character variety, the space of representations of the fundamental group, which gives the simplest description of the total space of your system as a differentiable manifold. So you have these three perspectives. You have this quite rich geometric structure, which is no doubt familiar to most of the people here, so I will not dwell too long. So I started out being interested in this from the perspective of isomonodromy. So the flows of the Hitchian system are basically certain non-linear differential equations on the moduli space of Higgs bundles. They're flows which live there. The isomonodromy equations, geometrically, they amount to a flat non-linear or Erismann connection on the family of Dirac moduli spaces when you vary the curve in a family. So I have a base here, a family of curves, and I look at the family of Dirac moduli spaces over that, and this has a natural flat Erismann connection, which one can write out explicitly in particular coordinates and gives natural non-linear differential equations, the isomonodromy equations. So we can ask the stronger question to try to classify this whole package. So in particular, the algebraic integrable system and the isomonodromy system at the same time. Somehow the screen is not working particularly well. Okay, I hope people can read that. Otherwise, I'll stop and boot into Windows if people insist. Is this legible? Yes. Okay, right, we'll stick with this for a bit then and see how it goes. So in particular, people in the isomonodromy world have studied low-dimensional examples in a great amount of detail, and we can use the results that they had there to try to extend to the classification of the higher dimensional moduli spaces which occur. So let's go back to the rational matrix picture. So we now will want to view the rational map as a meromorphic Higgs field, and it also has a perspective of a meromorphic connection on a trivial vector bundle. And the basic statement is that you still get this richer picture of having these three different algebraic structures in lots of examples. So let me state this in a slightly vague way here. So moduli spaces of meromorphic Higgs bundles often have such structure. This relies on the work of lots of different people. I haven't even mentioned the work on the irregular Riemann-Hilbert correspondence going back to, you know, Stokes and Birkhoff, and more recently people like Sibuya, Malgrange, and Deligne. So I have mentioned the work of Nitschure, Bottichin, and Markman to look at, you know, the Poisson integrable system structure on moduli spaces of meromorphic Higgs bundles. So there is an issue about, you know, we don't know that what they prove implies that every symplexic leaf has a structure of algebraic integrable system in the definition which I had before, but it's certainly true for lots of symplectic leaves. So somehow the spaces there, having a look at the naive algebra geometric moduli spaces where you just fix an order of the pole and you naturally get Poisson moduli spaces there. And we're basically interested in looking at symplectic leaves, but we don't know for every symplectic leaf that there is a corresponding space of connection. So I'll try to make precise the symplectic leaves that we do know what to do, and I will call those good, and I believe all of the rest are bad, but I would be happy if some people in the physics world who have looked at, you know, other examples can tell me if I'm making a mistake or not. So there are these symplectic structures, and this, you know, a Tiabot type symplectic quotient structure there was upgraded in this work with Bickard to get, you know, the structure of complete hyperkähler manifolds on lots of these. And then more recently, there was work of Woodhouse and Krichever to try to compute explicitly the symplectic structures that were here. And this, I fitted into this, you know, quasi-Hamiltonian or Lie group valued moment map perspective to give lots of new examples of Lie group valued moment maps. And this gives an algebraic geometric construction of these wild character varieties as algebraic symplectic manifolds. Okay. So we have this picture where we've upgraded to meromorphic Higgs, meromorphic connections, the Riemann-Hilbert-Birkhoff correspondence, and over on the right, we've got these wild character varieties. So I will, in a moment, specialize to a very simple class of examples, but let me quickly just mention sort of what the general picture might look like. So suppose I have a curve and I have a marked point here. I do the real oriented blow up to replace the point by this circle of directions. Now there's a basic fact you need to know that meromorphic connections on a formal punctured disk are classified by graded local systems on this circle. So no matter what else I do, behind the moduli problem, there will always be a graded local system in a neighborhood of the pole. And so we draw this annulus and call it the halo and put this graded local system there. In the interior of the curve, we just put the local system of solutions of our original connection. And what the Stokes data does, it gives you a way to glue the graded local system here to this local system in the interior, and that encodes the moduli of the original connection. The problem is that the way to glue, it jumps at certain singular directions, or the anti-Stokes directions, and so once you glue, you actually have monodromy around these tangential punctures that we've put in there artificially. And that's, you know, what the Stokes matrices are, moduli, monodromy around these extra or tangential punctures. There's a different perspective I'll mention in a moment, but this is the preferred perspective I want to work with. That's come out quite badly. So it's breaking the structure to this structure of graded local system there, and so the boundary at the middle is really broken up into these pieces. Typically, I'm breaking, you know, some complex reductive group to some block diagonal group, some Levy. And so I have a boundary here for each like factor in the Levy factor. And I call this fission because it's a natural way to break the structure group. It's not the inverse of fusion, it's different. I'll come back to this in examples.
I'm supposed to think in that picture that kind of inside that circle, I have kind of normal solution.
Right, that's it. That graded ecosystem is the monogamy of the formal normal form. And there are these twisted ones where that picture becomes the picture I had at the start, where the pole was at the infinite point. So the basic aim is to construct a long list, and I'll give a very few examples here. So suppose I look at rational maps that look like this. They're integrable systems, which are called the Manikov shift of argument systems, which occur. The isomonogamy systems in this example were looked at in a paper of Jimbo Miwa, Mori, and Sato. They looked at something slightly more general. This I call the dual Schlesinger system, as will become clear in a moment. The corresponding space of Stokes data, at least a framed version of it, is the dual Poisson Lie group, which is this algebraic Poisson manifold that you're supposed to quantize to get the quantum group. And so the standard, Drinfeld-Jimbo quantum group for G is a deformation quantization of this Poisson structure here. For connections having one pole of order 2 and one pole of order 1 on the sphere. So when we look at more general spaces of Poisson structures on Stokes data, we always have at the back of our mind that it's some sort of generalization of the class of Poisson structures which the quantum group is a quantization of. So a more perhaps standard tame example is this Schlesinger system. So you just look at Fuchsian systems or logarithmic connections on the trivial bundle over P1, the integrable systems here were looked at by Garnier, and quantum integrable systems, people call it the Gul'dan system, so it's more that the Gul'dan system is the quantum system, and Garnier had looked at the classical system before. The isomonogamy system is the Schlesinger system, and Garnier got to his system by looking at the sort of autonomous version of Schlesinger. And the character variety is just the space of representations of the fundamental groups. So it looks like G to the N modulo conjugation by G. This is the Poisson perspective, and you can look at the symplectic leaves of that. So the basic point is that the same system can have different lax pairs, and we would like to try to classify up to isomorphism. So a basic class of such isomorphisms occur here. So basically, I can look at rational maps like this, and these correspond at least up to sign to swapping over P and Q and A and B. So here we could think of as P and Q of certain rectangular matrices and A and B as certain the diagonal matrices up to sign. So the integrable system perspective was looked at by Adams, Harnad, and Hurtubise in their work on sort of dual pairs of moment maps into loop algebras. Harnad had a paper looking at the corresponding duality of these isomonogamy systems. And once you look at it from this perspective of connections, it is just the Fourier-Laplace transformation for a certain class of modules over the Weyl algebra. So basically connections on the affine line. And this is basically the class of examples that was looked at by Szilard, and he has proved that it actually gives a hyper-Kähler isometry. So for instance, we can look at particular examples. So suppose we look at the panel of A6 case. So here that corresponds to look at the Schlesinger system where you have four poles for rank 2. And as an example, the standard lax pair for panel of A6 with four poles of rank 2, the Harnad dual of that, if you will, or the Laplace transformation, is rank 3 of this type, having one pole of order 2 and one pole of order 1. So they look completely different, but the integrable systems and the isomonogamy systems and the character varieties are isomorphic, and the hyper-Kähler metrics are isometric.
Do you happen to know the NS-weight validation of that? Do you happen to know the NS-weight validation of that?
Numi and Yamada found one. Yeah, I referred to it in some paper, but yeah, I would like to understand their perspective more conceptually. But yes, that is known at least explicitly, but maybe not conceptually. But perhaps they understood it conceptually. So, one of the points of passing to the Betty picture is that you get this most explicit description, and you can sort of see what's happening more. The global space, and so here you get these Frick, Klein, Vogt cubic surfaces. So you have x, y, and z. So it's this affine cubic. And you have these parameters A, B, C, D that correspond to the choice of the four conjugacy classes of monogamy here, or correspond to the conjugacy class of monogamy and the formal monogamy at the pole of order two in this rank three picture. But there is a precise matching, and one can explicitly see how to match up the perspectives. This is the completely unframed spaces, so you need to quotient out by all of the possible groups that act. So in particular, it's an explicit description of a four-parameter family of complete hyperkähler manifolds. I mean, I'll end up calling this the affine D4 case, or you know, the Panov A6 case. So from the perspective at the top, I take a symplectic leaf of this Poisson B group L, and you need to quotient out by the framings, which is just the automorphisms of the coefficient of the pole of order two, which is just the torus here. So you do the multiplicative symplectic quotient by the torus, and you can see, well, the generic leaf is dimension six. It's the same as the dimension of a generic coadjoint orbit of SL3, and you're quotienting, you know, it's the torus of SL3, so you subtract off two twice to get this space of dimension two. And you can do the same type of computation in this 2x2 picture, which is basically what Frick, Klein, and Vogt did. And again, you get two, and you know, the surfaces are explicitly isomorphic, but that can be done. So in a paper with a student, we were sort of playing with, you know, suppose I take an arbitrary group, and I look at the tame picture, can I choose classes in the group such that I end up with a moduli space of complex dimension two? And so, for instance, suppose you take the complex group G2, it has this very special conjugacy class of complex dimension six. It's like the complex six sphere. So let's put three of those at three poles, and at the fourth pole, take a generic conjugacy class of G2. And so I get dimension three times six plus 12 for this product here. And then I want to do the multiplicative symplectic quotient by G2 to get the character variety. I want to subtract off 2 times 14, the dimension of the group, and you get 2. And so we explicitly computed what are the character varieties which occur, and it's a two-parameter family of these Frick-Klein surfaces. The two parameters come from the two eigenvalues of this generic class in G2, and we found that the classes you get are the ones where A, B, and C are equal. It's these symmetric Frick-Klein surfaces. It would be interesting. I mean, we don't know how to do this for the Dirac and Dolbeau perspectives, but no doubt there is a, you know, sort of a G2 Laplace transformation or something, but at the moment we just compute here. Right, I draw that picture. That picture is in this paper. Right. But there were somehow two relations which occur. But yeah, there is a discussion in the paper that it matches up with that, but it's not clear sort of intrinsically why that matching is the matching which is here. But you know, we did make that remark in the paper.
Are you saying here that all these spaces are isomorphic, or are you just saying that they have the same dimension?
No, these are all isomorphic. For the first two, we know it on each of the parts. On the third one, we just know here. But I mean, no doubt it will be true for the Dirac and Dolbeau. These are three representations of the abstract panel of A6 non-abelian Hodge space, if you will. There's this object which has these three representations or realizations.
And the first two, you can see the isomorphism because of the correspondence. But the last one is
so the first two come from this Adam Harnad Herterby's picture. The third, we just computed both and got the same thing. So, well, once we got something of dimension two, you're in a quite good situation that either, you know, it's a new realization of panel of A6, or you found a new complete hyperkähler manifold of real dimension four. And so you sort of want to compute it and hear it, you know, it is isomorphic. That I don't think people will discover new panel of A equations now, but you know, I don't think people have looked at sort of G2 lax pairs in the past. But yeah, that's what happens. Okay. So you can carry on the list. I mean, for instance, panel of A2, which I want to use as an example in a moment, you have a pole of order four with semi-simple leading term at the pole for 2x2. This is the standard lax pair for panel of A2. the character variety was computed in a slightly different Lax pair for panel V2 in a paper of Flashcut and Newell. It is equal to this, and there's one parameter which matches up with the formal monodromy at the pole here. So this is an irregular example, so it fits into this context with Bicard. It's, you know, the explicit description of a complete hyperkähler manifold, or at least the differentiable manifold which underlies that. So you can carry on the list. We'll come back to that in a moment. I want to focus on that example. So now I want to move on to this like sort of first steps towards classification, this theory of Dynkin diagrams. And so for me, this really comes from explicit sort of computations of Okamoto. He found that the panel of A6 has this affine D4 vial group symmetries and panel of A2 has affine A1 vial group symmetries. He computed this explicitly by, you know, compactifying the Dirac moduli space and computing directly what happens. And so, for instance, for panel of A6, you can guess pretty directly because we are starting out with rank 2 bundles on a 4-punctured sphere, and this kind of looks like the affine D4 Dynkin graph. The dimension vector you want to pick, you know, the 2 there matches up with the fact it's rank 2, and the, you know, the 4 legs corresponds to the 4 poles. So one can strengthen this statement slightly by observing, if you look at the open part of the moduli space where the bundle is holomorphically trivial, then this open part is isomorphic to the corresponding D4 ALE space that Kronheimer looks at, or the, if you will, the Nakajima quiver variety for affine D4 attached to this graph. So the moduli space we're interested in does have an open part, and so we feel it is correct to label this space by affine D4. So we would like to extend this to, you know, these other graphs as well. So for instance, Okamoto suggests that you know, panel of A2 should be to do with affine A1, whereas, you know, the space of Stokes data for this looks something like this. I have these 6 singular directions, and I have a rank 2 bundle in the middle. It's not immediate that these match up. And this actually can be done, and I'll explain how it works. So the ALE space here is, you know, the first example of a non-trivial hyperkähler manifold. It's the Iguchi-Hansen space, the cotangent bundle of P1 or a generic orbit of SL2. So you can check that is an open part of this. This is an exercise in a paper I wrote, but the open part of the corresponding Dirac space is indeed isomorphic to this. Pardon?
Don't you
lie? No, that's the panel of A3 case. This is panel of A2. And so we do want to parameterize this space, the panel of A2 space, by affine A1. And so we now understand how to, you know, relate the Stokes data to maps along the graphs as well. But this is more in the theory of multiplicative quivers and not the standard Nakajima quiver picture. So we need to sort of back up and talk about this a bit for the people who are not experts on quiver varieties and their multiplicative versions. So Nakajima, building on work with Kronheimer and of Kronheimer, described a way to attach a hyperkähler manifold, in particular a complex symplectic manifold, to a graph with certain data on the graph. So suppose I have a graph, for instance, the graph here. I can put a vector space at each node, or they can put a vector space at each node. I'll mainly describe the complex symplectic picture, and one can sort of upgrade to hyperkähler afterwards. So look at this vector space graded by the nodes. I is the node, so it's an I-graded vector space. And you can look at the space of representations of the graph on V, by which I mean the representation of the quiver, which is the double. So I have maps in both directions along each edge. So for instance, here I'd have A and B. And this has a symplectic structure by choosing an orientation, and so it can be viewed as the cotangent bundle of the maps in one direction. And this has an actual Hamiltonian action of the group of graded automorphisms. So you have this group H, the graded automorphisms. This is Hamiltonian with moment maps, something like AB and minus BA into the Lie algebra, or the dual of the algebra of H. So one can define the additive or Nakajima quiver variety like this. I'm doing the version without weights, and so it's if I've deframed in the sense of Crawley Booby for experts, but all of the Nakajima quiver varieties are special cases of the ones that occur from this construction. So you do the complex symplectic quotient at a scalar value of the moment map. You have a scalar at each node. So the scalars correspond to a point of C to the I, a scalar at each node that is viewed as being in the center of the Lie algebra of H. And you do the symplectic quotient with respect to H, and you get some variety there attached to the graph, a scalar at each node, and the vector of dimensions of your vector spaces that you put at each node. And there's a hyperkähler upgrading of this complex symplectic quotient, starting with the flat hyperkähler metric on this space of representations of the graph. So for instance, is this Kronheimer's thesis or early work of Kronheimer looks at this story for the affine Dinkin graphs and constructed all of the ALE spaces in a uniform way. So if you take an affine Dinkin graph, then the dimension of the space which occur, it's complex dimension 2. If you take the dimension vector to be the minimal null root. So in particular, if you get this or this, you get a hyperkähler 4 manifold, real dimension 4. Okay, so that story is probably quite well known. There is a multiplicative version. So really the graph was built out of edges, and the naive perspective initially is to just work out what to do for a particular edge. And so you can look at the maps in both directions with this open condition that you put in the condition that 1 plus AB is invertible. This is a standard thing that people who classify regular holonomic D modules on a disk do. But here, the main point is that Vandenberg proved that this is a quasi-Hamiltonian H space, or a multiplicative version, or a group valued. A space having a group values moment map where the moment map is 1 plus AB and 1 plus BA inverse. The A multiplicative version of the moment map that we had before. So this is a theory which has sort of a more complicated notion of two-form and action of the group. You know, it's a sort of a more complicated version of the axioms of a Hamiltonian space, but the point is, after I do a multiplicative symplectic reduction, you end up with genuine symplectic structures on the quotients. So for instance, if I did this for the affine D4 graph, so I did this on each edge, and I can fuse together the node in the middle, there is a multiplicative quiver variety attached to that data. It is indeed isomorphic to the space that we wanted to get, this Frick-Klein-Vogt surface. And so at least for these graphs which are stars, this procedure with graphs gives the right class of spaces. So let's call this the Vandenberg space, or BV1, V2. So the question we want to focus on, so suppose I have a doubled edge. So there's this naive perspective. I take two of the Vandenberg edges and I fuse the ends together, and I will get some quasi-Hamiltonian space there I can reduce. And the space you get is not isomorphic to the wild character variety corresponding to the Panova 2 space we looked at just now. And so there's something cleverer that can be done, or something that, you know, by learning lots about Stokes data, we see what to do. So there should be a sequence of these spaces if I have, you know, three edges or four or what have you, the first of which will be this Vandenberg edge. So if you look at Euler's paper from 1764, I think, on the third page of that, there is a list of polynomials which are now called Euler's continuant polynomials, the second of which is 1 plus AB, and the fourth of which looks like this. So suppose I put these two edges together, the moment map is something like the product of the moment maps I had before. I would get 1 plus AB times 1 plus CD. If you multiply that out, you get this, except you don't get that term there, that there's one extra term appears. This is different to what you get by gluing the Vandenberg spaces together. But it turns out that the Stokes perspective gives this. And this does give the correct wild character variety for panel of A2. So the rule is that you take the product of all of the symbols which occur at first, and then you delete all of the possible consecutive pairs of symbols to get the monomials afterwards. So for instance, here you've deleted AB, BC, and CD, and here you've deleted AB and CD. This is the rule to construct these continuants. So to understand this, we need to read the work of Stokes, or at least try to. So this is, you know, the discontinuity of arbitrary constants which appear in divergent development, 1857. And so, you know, he actually did detect these anti-Stokes directions in his paper, not because he knew how to do sort of Borel sums, but he was able to sum and stop after a bit, and he saw it had this discontinuous direction, which we now understand through summation as being, you know, the singular direction of the summation operator, or multi-summation operator that, yeah, that was detected in his paper for the Airy example. Okay, so this is perhaps slightly out of order. So there is this other perspective on Stokes' data that was earlier and goes back to Malgrange and Sibuya and Deligne and others. So I've described a bit this perspective over here, which I call sort of Stokes local systems. But the earlier perspective is just to look at the local system of solutions. And as I go towards the pole, so here the pole is drawn at infinity, you look at the flags of exponential growth rates of solutions. So there's certain directions where the exponential ordering switches over, but on the sectors between that, there's a well-defined flag of the exponential growth rates which occur as you go towards the pole. So suppose we're just looking at this GL2 picture. The flag represents basically one vector, which classically was called the subdominant solution. These examples are studied in detail in this book of Sibuya from 1975, and, you know, the Stokes condition implies that consecutive vectors are not allowed to be parallel. So you get this explicit description of what the wild character variety is in terms of these flags, or if you prefer, you know, points of the sphere. So the local system on the plane is trivial. So I've basically got, you know, six directions in C2, or you know, six points of P1. And the symplectic leaves are got by fixing the formal monodromy, which here amounts to this multi-ratio. So this is the B which occurred in this Flaschker and Newell expression before. The same space is described as these, you know, six tuples of points such that consecutive ones are distinct, and the symplectic leaves are got by fixing the multi-ratio of the six tuple of points all up to PSL2C, the Möbius transformation. So there is this other algebraic description. When you look at quite complicated Stokes structures, so for instance, having complicated flags and complicated conditions to pass from one sector to the next, there's a way to classify the flags which occur the Malgrange-Sibuya non-abelian cohomology set. So you pass to that, and then you need to parameterize what that set is. Well, it turns out multi-summation gives preferred coordinates on that, and that's really what this Stokes-Stokel system parameterizes. There's this sort of algebraic or combinatorial step to pass between the two, but it's simpler to describe what the spaces are once you've passed over to this Stokes-Stokel system picture. But in these basic examples, it's good perhaps to have both perspectives. Okay. Here's a cartoon of the big picture, which I haven't really described, but over on the bottom over here, you've got additive symplectic geometry. So basically these spaces M star, which are finite dimensional complex symplectic quotients. So they're quotients, you know, typically of things like co-adjoint orbit and co-tangent bundles. And this can be viewed as the finite dimensional version of what might be called infinite dimensional Hamiltonian geometry. So here I'm basically thinking of the Atiyah-Bott picture of connections on bundles, on curves. And so they prove that, you know, the curvature is the moment map for the action of the gauge group. And so you can look at the quotient, which is, you know, the moduli space of flat connections or the character variety here. The quasi-Hamiltonian picture appears if you frame at one point on the boundary. Before you get to that, there's the Hamiltonian loop group perspective if you frame on the whole of the boundary. But in order to have an algebraic perspective, you can just frame at one point on the boundary or near the boundary if you're looking at the punctured picture. This was worked out by Alexeyev, Malkin, and Meinrenken. And basic examples are, you know, the conjugacy class in the group, with the inclusion being the multiplicative moment map, and the double, which is the moduli space of flat connections on an annulus having one base point near each boundary circle. So as a space, it should just isomorphic to G cross G, and it's a quasi-Hamiltonian G cross G space. I have the framings at each of the marked points. And then you have this multiplicative symplectic quotient, the moment map being the monodromy around the boundary. And that's how these symplectic varieties can be got algebraically. You start out with this infinite dimensional picture, and then there's this algebraic perspective from the quasi-Hamiltonian world. So for instance, here you get these moduli spaces of Fuchsian systems, and you have the Riemann-Hilbert map, which is this analytic map from the additive spaces, these multiplicative or character varieties here. And the game I've been playing is basically to upgrade all of this to connections having higher order poles. It's quite easy to work out what to do here. You're just fixing the orbits of the principal parts. So there's lots of algebraic symplectic spaces there. And then the aim was to work out what's happening over here. First of all, in the genus Dirac picture, and then it's easy to extend to arbitrary genus because the bit you've added on is just happening at a pole. So this gives the wild character varieties. And now the map is upgraded, this irregular Riemann-Hilbert map or Riemann-Hilbert-Birkhoff. Okay, so that's the basic sort of cartoon of how, you know, quasi-Hamiltonian things occur as like the multiplicative version of Hamiltonian things. So now let me just sketch the basic picture for wild character varieties. Well, the tame picture is that I have a surface and you look at the space of representations of the fundamental group. And this has this other algebraic description as connections on G-bundles. And then we can look at the case of a punctured curve, and you get this Poisson variety there, which is algebraic connections on G-bundles on the open curve. It's actually hard to construct an algebraic moduli space there. You need to look at extensions across the poles, but that's understood. But I just want to give the picture here. So once you forget the condition for them to be regular at the poles, you get this infinite dimensional sort of Poisson scheme because you've not fixed an order of the poles. So you want to fix something in order to get finite dimensional moduli spaces. In particular, you would like to get things which are symplectic. And for this, you need to fix the irregular type at each pole. And so we look at algebraic connections on G-bundles with fixed irregular types. So I need to explain what that is. The general picture, which works in these twisted cases as well, where you choose a Cartan subalgebra and your irregular type lives in there, I can always pass to a cyclic cover at the pole to straighten out my Cartan subalgebra. These are classified by sort of conjugacy classes in the finite wild group, and they're sort of understood. But let's start out by describing the untwisted ones. I have this standard Cartan subalgebra corresponding to a Cartan subalgebra of the constant algebra. I just take an element in there. I'm only actually interested in the principal part of it. And this irregular type gives me a way to fix the irregular part of the connection. I just look at connections such that locally at each pole, there exists a trivialization such that it's of the form dq plus something with only first order poles, something logarithmic. So the irregular type does indeed fix the irregular type of the connections. So I start out in the isomonodromy picture, and the basic point is that the coefficients of these Qs does behave like the moduli of the curve. The way to understand irregular isomonodromy in general is that you're varying this triple consisting of the curve, the marked points, and the irregular type. And so we put those together and call it a wild Riemann surface or an irregular curve. And that's what you need to pick in order to get one of these wild character varieties. And the general isomonodromy statement is, if I look at an admissible deformation of a wild surface, then the wild character varieties form a bundle with a natural flat connection over this, you know, moduli space of wild surfaces. So it's precisely the same statement as before, but you have these new moduli which generalize the moduli of the curve. And so, for instance, if you look at this example, just having one pole of order 2, for instance, you would get the G braid group there. And this explains the geometry under this quantum vial group that acts on this space G star that was studied earlier by Jan and others, I guess Lustig mainly. So we have this nice geometric picture, but I don't really want to dwell on isomodulary more than moduli spaces here. So this is the picture if I have trivial Betti weights. You really need to put those in as well. And so you need, you know, the analog of like a parabolic structure or a parahoric structure here. And you need to put in a compatibility condition between that and the irregular part of the connection. This is technical, and so I'll just state it and move on. But so say a connection is very good if it's isomorphic to one of these with the Q straightened out as before in this, you know, standard Cartan subalgebra, and you want this to be a connection on a parahoric bundle, so a torsor for a parahoric Bruhat-Titz group scheme, and the weights correspond to a point of the building, and there's a precise condition of this connection to be a logahoric connection with weights theta. So if you Google that, there's a paper which explains precisely what that means. The point is that the weight has to be in the same Cartan subalgebra as Q here, or at least the real part of it. These has to be in TR, and this is in the same thing. And so that's a precise compatibility condition. And the general condition, I think, is that you want ones which reduce to this the very good picture after a cyclic cover of a punctured disk around it, each pole. So I believe that's the context in which all of this technology works, and I don't know how to make it work beyond that.
And so what would be the breadth thing?
So if I have a high order pole which is extremely nilpotent, you won't get this. So there's also this question of which symplectic leaves the Hitchin map actually restricts to be an integrable system. So I would like to conjecture, or at least guess, that that may match up with this. There's a paper of Baraglia and Kamgarpour and someone else I'm forgetting. Their conjecture is compatible with this, except they insist on something about the base being the spectrum of the invariants. So I have a slightly different definition of integrable system.
The issue is whether it is actually Lagrangian or not.
Well, that's one quick question. Yeah, here I'm stating, I think, this is the right thing to get Riemann-Hilbert-Birkhoff and non-abelian Hodge working. And it may be that it happens to be the same thing that gives the right symplectic leaves as well. That's more of a question than but I would be happy if that was true, and it does not conflict with the conjecture which those people made for the nilpotent parahoric Higgs case. Okay, so there's some questions there which I hope are quite precise, but they need more work. I think we know how to make this work for GLN and for other groups, I think, as well, but we haven't really looked at the integrable systems. There are, even for GL2. Just look at the, you know, what a principal part could be. You know, it depends on, you know, exactly which parahoric structure I've got, because I can always put the, you know, it's a quick question of how the principal part is compatible with the parahoric structure, because the action of the loop group does move the parahoric structure as well.
A little of kitschy questions. One might say that I'm happy if the behavior of there is a boundary condition which corresponds to some actual solution of Hitchin equation that's allowed.
So somehow the Hitchin equation is on the open curve because you have this metric, and so this is more the algebraic geometric perspective, yeah, that you have a particular extension, and so we kind of know the nice extensions which occur from that picture. It's just that when you take the naive algebraic definition of the moduli spaces, you're just fixing the pole, and I think there are bad things which occur there.
That theorem could be that there is a good definition of the difference of the Hitchin equation, the equation.
Right, right. And I think that gives this algebraic definition. But if you speak to an algebraic geometer, they just fix an order of the pole and look at the Poisson thing which is there. I think there are bad things which occur. Well, there are, but I don't know how to put a hypercalometric on those symplectic leaves. They may be accidentally isomorphic to the ones which are good, but a priori, I don't know what to do. And so if physics has an insight in that, that would be great. But at the moment, I think I want to...
Physics would then make sure that things work on the infinity differential equations.
Right, and that would match up with this, I think. Okay, so maybe it's just an algebra geometric question. So let me go back to this example. And so I've got a simple irregular type just having one term. I'm looking at GL2. I just have one term with two distinct eigenvalues. And there's the various data attached to this. I have a centralizer group. Here is the maximal torus, the things which commutes with Q or A. This determines the singular directions. So basically, solutions involve this term E to the Q. So Q is this diagonal matrix with the entries Q1 and Q2. And you look at where, if you look at the growth of E to the Q1 and E to the Q2 as you go towards the pole, these will switch over in different directions. Here it's the picture with degree 3, and so that they switch over 6 times. And the Stokes directions are where they switch over, and the singular or anti-Stokes directions are the ones with the biggest difference, like this. These are defined in that way. So we do this real glow up, and we add these tangential punches. We have this halo in the middle here, as we discussed before. And then you naturally have a Stokes group attached to each of these. And so in this example, they alternate between U plus and U minus. And now we can define what a Stokes local system is. Well, it's a local system on this auxiliary curve with these extra punches. And you want to have a flat reduction to this block diagonal group H, which was the torus in this case, in the halo. That corresponds to the formal monodromy of the normal form. And you put in this Stokes condition. If I start in the middle and go out and around, you have to get monodromy in this corresponding Stokes group. And you do that for each of these extra punches or the tangential punches. So that's the topological object that classifies connections. So there's an equivalence between the connections with this irregular type and these Stokes local systems of this form. And it's algebraically equivalent to the Stokes structure, the story with the flags, but these are easier to classify and they fit in with this quasi-Hamiltonian picture. So we can classify these easily. They're just sort of representations of the fundamental groupoid of our space. So we choose a base point at each end. We look at the fundamental groupoid and we can look at all these paths and things. So we just look at the representations of this groupoid into the group, but we look at the special class, the Stokes representations, which obey the obvious conditions. So the monodromy around the boundary in the middle has to be an H because it's the monodromy of an H local system. And you put in the condition that the monodromy around these extra punches has to be in the Stokes group. In my paper in 2002, I proved that these framed spaces of Stokes local systems are indeed quasi-Hamiltonian G cross H spaces. So I have G acting because of the framing there and H because I have an action of H in the middle. This is proved for arbitrary complex reductive groups in this paper for the Borel case. Okay, so this is all very explicit in this example. It's as a space, it's just the product of G cross H cross the product of the Stokes groups. The Malgrange-Sibuya non-abelian cohomology set gives the piece in the middle, and this is the explicit description of it that comes out of the work of Ramis and Laudet-Richaud and others.
What is H in this case?
H is just the torus here. It's the centralizer of the irregular type Q. And so I have these spaces. I have a G boundary here, and I now have an H or a T boundary in the middle, so I can glue on other moduli spaces of connections. I have a G surface I can put here and H here. So in general, H can be the levy of any parabolic of G if I have an arbitrary reductive group. So for GLN, it's some block diagonal group. There's a twisted version also, but let's do this first. So now we want to get back to these continuants. So let's just call this space A and call it a Fission space because it breaks the group from G to H. So explicitly, it looks like this, and the moment map looks like that. Let's look at the reduction with respect to G. So in effect, I have this disk and I glue a G disk on the boundary. So I now have a sphere with just the one marked point. And so I have a residual action of H. So I now have a quasi-Hamiltonian H space. And this is just the framed wild character variety attached to this sphere with just one marked point with this irregular type. So once I do the real blow up, it becomes a disk with the irregular polar infinity. So this is explicit. It's the space of Stokes data in the formal monogamy H such that this product holds. And now I can compute what it is and get to this continuant conjugation that basically I'm putting this part to be in the Gauss cell. So it's just that this product has to have 1-1 matrix entry, which is non-zero. And you see what this 1-1 matrix entry is. And the first one gives the Vandenberg condition. And when you carry on, you get all of these even Euler continuants. In particular, the Euler continuants are group valued moment maps in this way. And the moment map indeed matches up with what we wanted to get. So now we can define what we mean by the invertible representations of this graph, because I do have this list of maps along edges of a graph. If I put, you know, the vector space C at each end, you know, these visibly are maps in both directions along each edge of the graph. So I can define, you know, rep star to be this. This is the family of quasi-Hamiltonian spaces which generalizes the Vandenberg edge. And one can now extend this, and this was for a very simple irregular type. I can take an arbitrary irregular type for GLN. So first of all, I would just do the same as here, but with arbitrary vector spaces at each node. That's a blocky version of what we did before. And you get these non-commutative Euler continuants. And then I can replace Q by an arbitrary Q, and there's a class of graphs which occur that thus occur in moduli spaces of connections on curves, and I call these Fission graphs. Let me just sketch briefly how that works. So I have an arbitrary irregular type. And then if you work down looking at the eigenspaces as you go down the pole, then your vector space breaks up into the eigenspaces of the first one. So each of these are commuting diagonal matrices. I mean, the diagonal and say that they commute. So I might have two eigenspaces. And as I work down, it breaks up. I have this sort of Fission tree of the eigenspaces. And this gives a way to construct graphs. So for instance, if I'm at depth 2, I break up into these two pieces and put two edges, and then here I break up this here and I put the one edge there, and here I break up the nodes at the top and put no edges, and then I can draw the graph this way. That's an example of a Fission graph attached to this irregular type Q. So for instance, for R equals 2, you get all of the complete k-partite graphs exactly. And once you go to R equals 3 or more, you get multiple edges. So for instance, we looked at the case with R equals 3, which gives this affine A1. So for instance, you get these, which are familiar from Okamoto's works. We have this sort of more moduli theoretic way to understand why these graphs occurred in Okamoto's work. But for instance, we don't get pentagon, that this is not a complete k-partite graph. And so it doesn't occur. And we don't have a Panleva equation attached to the pentagon either. So there's an enrichment of this. You really want to fix the formal monogamy at each pole. So you glue on a leg at each pole. This was mentioned briefly in Kazuki's talk. And so you glue on, and the class of graphs which occur I call supernova graphs, that are a generalization of this star-shaped graph that appeared in the work of Crawley-Bouvy. So we have this large class of graphs which occur, and we can do the reflections corresponding to the Weyl group of this graph, which gives isomorphisms of the moduli spaces, which generalizes this Harnad duality in the work of Adams, Harnad, Hertebees. Okay, and then we can do the reductions to get the wild character variety and check that we do indeed get the Plaschke-Newell surface for the variety attached to this double edge in this new world, but it isn't isomorphic to gluing two of the Vandenberg edges, as I said before. Okay, and you can look at the additive spaces, which are indeed isomorphic to the Nakajima quiver varieties. And so this gives a modular realization of a large class of Nakajima varieties. So you have a picture where you have these additive quivers over here and multiplicative there, which realize certain of the wild character varieties. And you can look at the class of spaces which occur for complex dimension two, the hyperkähler 4 manifolds. So I've not been sure what to call these, but so most of them occur from the world of Panleve equations, like this, Panleve 6, 5, 3, 4, 2, and 1. And you get these three extra, which have no isomonotropy deformations, which have higher rank, the rank being 6, 4, and 3. They have these open parts. You can look at M star, and these are, have these open parts which rise from which of the corresponding ALE space. So for instance, we were looking at the A11 just now. The others here have open parts which rise from which the Atiyah Hitchin space, the double cover, and this D2 ALF space, which is like the, you take the cotangent bundle of SL2C and do the symplectic quotient by C star on both sides. So I was thinking to call them K2, but I was thinking just before the talk, but, you know, so normally people look at K3, and so you can either change the 3 or the K, but I think it might be better to change the K, that they should be called, you know, Hitchin, Hodge, and Higgs, and so you call them H3 surfaces rather than K3, because there are these three H's which are there, and that would fit in with the perspective here. I mean, non-abelian Hodge surfaces, or perhaps H3 is a better name, but I only thought of this just before the talk, and so I haven't changed the slides yet. Okay, but I just want to review what I've spoken about and explain how I understood this slightly better after I first gave the first version of this talk. So what we did, we had this Vandenberg edge, and the moment map was something like 1 plus AB. And then we said, well, it's possible to glue two of these together and you get something which has a moment map, which is like the product of the ones we had before. But that's not quite the good thing to do, to get these, you know, algebraic descriptions of the hyperkähler manifolds. I mean, this is a perfectly good complex symplectic space, but we don't know how to construct a complete hyperkähler metric on it. Whereas over here we do, and all of these constructions pass back to this sort of, you know, irregular extension of, you know, Hitchin's construction. So here we get, you know, the full degree 4 continuance. So if you play with these continuance, I mean, people have been playing with these for like 100 years or so. There's a book of the Review of Continuance written in 1903. They're very sort of classically popular. These factorize, so I can change C here such that this product is equal to the degree 4 continuant there, but I can factorize in a different way by changing B rather than C. So that's true. And so what that means is that I have two different maps, either the left factorization or the right factorization, which is an inclusion of this space into there. So from, you know, this fusion of B2 and B2 into the full space B4. And one can check that these do match, that if I restrict the quasi-Hamiltonian structure there to the one which is there, they do match up. And then you can say, well, let's count all of the different factorizations which occur. So suppose I want to factorize into factors of degree 1, not degree 2, which I did here. There's various different ways to do it, and you get 14. And you can see that Bn has the Catalan number of factorizations as well. And one can explain this because Laudet defined an algebra which has the same properties as these sort of left and right products that we had at the top. And this is called the free duplicial algebra. And so one can see the Catalan numbers occurring from there. But of course, the Catalan numbers count the triangulations of an n plus 2 gone as well. And so you wonder if there's some relation to triangulations. Well, you know, we did start out with a piece of surface. And so perhaps we should redraw this in terms of the surfaces, not this quiver picture that we've kind of pushed it into. So, you know, the Vandenberg edge corresponds to this space of Stokes local system that looks something like this. And the B4 looks like this hexagon, as we talked about before. We just need to understand what the fusion looks like. Well, the fusion is indeed the fusion. I take two of the Vandenberg edges and I fuse, I glue them into two of the three holes of a three-holed sphere. If fusion is fusion. And so I can look at like the Stokes local systems on here, and then the factorization amounts to pushing this together. So recall that each of these are labeled by either plus or minus, and you need to push together the ones that match. So for instance, the left map would be something like that, and the right would match this edge with the edge at the top there. So the image of this under the left map is the thing which is related to this, and this corresponds to an open part where a certain continuant or formal monodery that goes around this part has to be invertible. Okay, so we see how to divide it up into squares or quadrilaterals, and we want to do it to triangles because that's what we want to get to. So we need a piece which is a triangle. So we read slightly further in Stokes's paper and we get this picture of the Stokes diagram of the area equation, and we see it looks like a triangle. And so one can define what is a Stokes local system here. The Stokes structures have been defined before. So we do as before, but now we need to have a twisted local system in the halo. This is slightly technical, and in this paper with Daisuke, we did this for arbitrary reductive groups, but it's quite concrete for GL2 here. So to summarize, we can define twisted Stokes local systems for any group G. Stokes structures were known before for GLN. And then we can look at the moduli space of these framed twisted Stokes local systems precisely as before. These are, now they're not quasi-Hamiltonian spaces, they're twisted quasi-Hamiltonian spaces. So simple examples of these would be what people call twisted conjugacy classes of the group. You have these automorphisms of the group which occur, but that naturally fits into this picture of twisted local systems. So now we can define this piece, which is a triangle, and we get, for instance, the odd continuants occurring. This is now the panel of A1 hierarchy, whereas we looked at the panel of A2 hierarchy before. So we get the triangle gives the degree 1 continuance, and the degree 3 1 corresponds to what you would have for the lax pair of the panel of A1 equation. So this would be Airy, and this would be panel of A1. So indeed, we can now factorize that we actually are gluing together the triangles to get these open parts of the wild character varieties that we had before. But of course, at least if the dimensions are equal to 1, this is familiar from the complex WKB picture, where things are locally approximated by Airy. So let me just draw the picture of that from Boris's paper in 1983. So he draws the Stokes graphs which occur from the quartic oscillator, which is again this thing which is like the thing you isomonodromically deform for panel of A2, so it matched up with a hexagon. So for instance, if you look at the graph at the right here, it has these branch cuts we want to delete, and you get this picture. And so this is a triangulation of a hexagon by drawing this picture and then deleting what we had before. And so it all fits together. We now have these triangles that we can glue in this quasi-Hamiltonian way.
Amalgamation.
Pardon? I don't know. But I don't think they have the quasi-Hamiltonian structures. I'm just saying that we have these pieces and we can put them together and this happens. I think there's lots of other ways to perhaps understand what's happening. And I think morally, most of it goes back to what people in complex WKB did, or maybe the work of Penner. But
let's say not build the modulation pieces as doing, for example, doing together to compare squares to make an hexagon.
Right.
I think it has a bunch of amalgamations of really good students that meanings on the external edge.
Yeah, but I don't think they have a quasi-Hamiltonian way to do it, and so they don't have a way to get the symplectic structure algebraically. I don't know what they do. I mean, I've looked at their papers.
They multiply the variables, but the edges.
Right, but they don't have a quasi-Hamiltonian structure there. The algebraic symplectic structure comes from the quasi-Hamiltonian. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but so, right, these squares were in my paper in 2002, and so, this is. We need to have a look to work out precisely what they did and what was known when. It all goes back to the complex WKB, but I think the precise statements I'm making now was not known, and I think lots of things that they do are simple consequences of this quasi-Hamiltonian picture, that they have a perspective of trying to construct the cluster of variety by gluing these pieces. Our perspective is more that you have this nice space built out of Stokes data, which is just there, that has a nice complete hyper-Kähler metric and, you know, special Lagrangian vibrations because it has this relation to Hitchin systems. They have these open pieces and they try and cook up a big space out of it. And the statement is more that we already have the big space and it's very clear and explicit. But we can discuss and...
Are there any questions?
The colors. It was an artistic impression of what this might look like. Should I go back to the start? I mean, it was drawn with a mathematical software package. So the basic picture is that I would have a G here, and this would break to these pieces, but here it's a twisted breaking. It's breaking to a twisted torus. The fact is the boundary does look like the boundary here. It has broken the structure group down. But, you know, you try to draw a picture, and if you do it in black and white, you can't tell what the picture looks like, and so you press the button on the computer that does the colors and you get this. But you see that you have this monodromy, the edges do switch over after you walk around the once. It is a sort of a picture of what the Stokes diagram of this case does look like.
Something I would like to give more questions for the coffee break.
Thank you.